Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at ThomisticInstitute.org.
All right, so we're shifting now to St. Catherine of Siena, another Dominican, but a woman. She lived in the century after Thomas Aquinas. Now, my first talk is going to focus on Catherine and infused virtue. So I get to build on what Father and Professor Corbett did with some of those general principles about God and God's goodness, and then Thomistic ethics. And I'm going to go into more particular of something about the particular of this good that we participate in as to virtue, but specifically as to Catherine of Siena, which raises, of course, a question. So I will have to open with a little bit of a rationale as to why speaking to virtue in Catherine of Siena. I will also note something of Catherine's understanding of virtue, which is very Christological. So I'm going to touch upon Christ as the exemplar, which is, again, Father has already noted in terms of God being good. Catherine has that in her theology of virtue. Then I'm going to introduce an image that Catherine uses. Catherine uses a lot of images, and one is her image of this tree of charity. I'll also speak briefly of another one of her images, Il Ponte, the bridge, to introduce back with their Christology. And I'm going to use this tree of charity in Catherine to speak about four virtues. There's a lot of virtues. I'm going to just summarize four because they have specific place in this tree of charity and they're necessary for all virtue. So I'm going to focus on charity, humility, patience, and prudence, and just kind of give a little bit of an overview of how they're connected and why they're essential for all of us in the life of virtue. Now, many of you probably heard of Catherine, but many of you, maybe you at least know her name, but don't know a lot about her. She's not as popular as her Dominican brother Thomas, unless you are among the Catheriniati, the followers of Catherine. Unlike Thomas, Catherine does not have systematic treatises, meaning she doesn't have a Summa or a De Veritate or a De Malo. Her writings are much more contextual. We have about 400 letters. So these letters are written to popes, kings, queens, her family, lay people she knew, followers. She writes to anybody, even if they wouldn't listen to her. Catherine writes these letters. But that's the context of a great deal of her teaching, these letters. We also have about 26 of her prayers. I give you the shortest of these. But she has other prayers that her secretaries wrote down. So there were secretaries, even with her letters. Catherine was not educated. She did not know how to read or write. Well, we know Peter and Paul appeared to Thomas. Well, Thomas and John appeared to Catherine and taught her how to read and write. But she didn't write a lot of things. She had these secretaries who wrote down. And that's why we have many of her writings, through these secretaries. We also have one book, and Catherine called it My Book. If you look it up, though, it's going to be called The Dialogue. Why? It's a dialogue between Catherine and the Father. And this, too, was dictated. It occurred over months. She has this dialogue with the Father, and then she dictates it, and her secretaries have written it down. So those are the main writings we have of Catherine. And this is something of a challenge, because how do we try to systematize somebody who's totally unsystematic? I'm going to try to do that a little bit in these two talks, so bear with me. But also, because her writings are contextual, we understand Catherine's life through her writings and her writings through her life, much more than with Thomas or some other systematic writers. Now, so I'm going to talk a little bit. I'm going to introduce a little bit about her life for that reason. So I'm going to start with just a simple overview, and I'll bring up a couple other elements of her life as we go through these talks. So who is Catherine Benincasa? That's her last name, Benincasa. She was born in Italy, Siena. Italy didn't exist. She was born in Siena. In 1347, that's the same year the plague arrived in Europe. And a year later, it arrived in Tuscany, where Siena is. And I say, with COVID, we understand a little bit more about the plague. You know, we always talk about the plague, but COVID kind of gave us our own plague. So we understand perhaps a little bit of what it would have been like to live through something like that, where people are dying all around you and suffering. Catherine was the youngest of about 25 children. Okay, well, but she lost many of her family members in the plague. Her father and her older brothers ran a dyer shop, so materials, dyeing them. And the shop was in the below the house. You can still see something of it still today in Siena. So her family was neither poor, but they weren't nobility, but they were well respected in Siena. Now, the plague was not the only crisis Catherine endured. In fact, there were two major crises in the church. When Catherine was born in 1347, since 1309, the Pope had been living in Avignon, France, the Avignon Papacy, or the Babylonian captivity, the other Babylonian captivity. And some wondered whether the Pope would ever return to the city of Peter and Paul. But Catherine would join many ardent voices telling the Pope, you must return to Rome. She even visited Pope Gregory the 11th in Avignon, and shortly after he returned. So in January 1377, the Pope returned to Rome. Unfortunately, Gregory died within about a year. And so there was another election. Now, if you think, if the papacy has been out of Rome for several decades in France, many of the cardinals who've been elected, have been selected or appointed, are what? French. Now they come back to Rome, and Rome is not nice in the 14th century. And they elect a pope, and they elect Urban the VI. But Urban is calling for a reform, which Catherine is calling for. This is the same reform that Luther is calling for later. It had already been called for. The church was already in a mess, and Catholics knew it too, and Catherine is calling for it. Now, Urban, though, is a little harsher. If you read the letters that Catherine writes to Gregory and the letters she writes to Urban, they're very different. Why? Gregory, she's spurring him on, get rid of the stinking weeds, you know, come on, act like the Pope and do it. And Urban, she's kind of like, oh, would you just kind of slow down? Be careful. Why? Because they're very different personalities. So Urban is harsh. She's calling for reform. Well, some of the cardinals, they don't like what he's doing. And so you end up with a division. And some of the cardinals eventually decide, we don't like Urban, and they declare his election invalid, and they elect another pope. So now we enter into the Western Schism. Catherine dies before there are three popes. So if you think the church is a mess today, relax. And we see God's in charge. All right. So that's just one of the messages, I would say. So Catherine, she supported Urban the VI until she died in 1380, and it was Urban who invited Catherine to come to Rome. So that's why she left her home of Siena, went to Rome in 1378. She died there less than a year and a half later. And that's why part of her body is in Rome. I say part of her body, that's another whole story. After Catherine died, she received many titles. Saint, co-patroness of Rome with Peter and Paul. Co-patroness of Italy with St. Francis, co-patroness of Europe with Benedict, who we celebrate today, Cyril and Methodius, Edith Stein and Bridget of Sweden. And she is also one of the first female doctors of the church, like Thomas. Okay, so there's something about, because that means there's an eminent of teaching in Catherine that the church has declared, also a universality of her teaching. Now, yesterday, Professor Corbett spoke a great deal about Thomas's ethics and his extensive teaching on virtue and vice. So the question is, why would we turn to Catherine today? Why don't we just go to Aquinas? I teach Aquinas on virtue more than I teach Catherine on virtue. But let me give you a little rationale. As I said, first of all, like Thomas, Catherine is a doctor of the church. So the church has said her teaching is at this level that we should know something of it. Secondly, Catherine was uneducated, as I noted. She did not read Aquinas, but she was a Dominican. Her home was just about 50 yards from the Dominican church. She studied, she learned Thomas's teaching from the Dominican friars. She also had some Augustinian, because she knew some Augustinian monks that were just right near her home as well. So she has an integration of Father's patristic writing, as well as something of the Thomistic. That being said, Catherine's style is different. She has a very practical approach. So she's interpreting Aquinas, and I would say her teaching complements Aquinas. It's not different from, it's based in, but it's complementary and sometimes extends where Thomas doesn't go in some areas. Also, Catherine has been called a master of the life of virtue. Again, as Professor Corbett yesterday showed Thomas in his life of virtue, Catherine too was a master of virtue. So she lived what she preached. And those would be some reasons of why we study this. But I could push further. Yeah, but still you got this 14th century young woman, uneducated. What does she have to say? Look to these fine, educated people I'm sitting among. What does a woman of that age have to say to us today in 2024? Does she have something that's relevant? Well, I would say there's the question of virtue. Do we still need virtue today? Do we have different virtues, even from Aquinas? Is Catherine's teaching on virtue relevant? Well, as it's the same question, is Thomas's teaching on virtue relevant? Well, we're still human beings. We're still people of habit. We still have the same good, even if people deny it, right? We still have to perfect these powers with habits. And so I would say there's something of Catherine, and I'll go into a little bit further why she's relevant today, but she's speaking of something that's very human. And just to, as an aside, problem with Catherine, she's not systematic. She doesn't just give us definitions like Thomas does, but I would argue that she will agree with Thomas's definition of virtue. So let's just go back to that. What is virtue? Simple definition from Aquinas. A good quality of mind. We're rational beings. It has something to do with being in accord with reason, by which I live rightly, I do the good. This is all about the good. God is, only God is good, yet I participate in that good by my action, which is virtue. Thomas says, of which no one can make bad use. Virtue can't be used for evil. So if we think of some of the virtues that people propose today, like tolerance, a classic one, is it truly virtue? And then an added element, Thomas says, which God works in us without us. Then we're making a distinction between acquired virtue, that which I do of my own effort, and infused virtue, which comes from God. Now, when Catherine is speaking, Catherine has both of these elements in there. I'm going to focus, though, today on infused virtue. Okay, that comes with grace. That's going to be my focus. We can take some questions on acquired, but I'm going to focus on those virtues that come from God. Everybody all right with that? Okay. So, virtue helps us perform good actions, perfecting the powers of the soul. And we can do them with ease. It becomes easy to say no to the fifth, well, for me, the second or third bowl of gelato. All right? Similar to perfecting our muscles and our bodies, if you've been in sports, right? You perfect it. It's difficult at first if you're in sports. Why? Because your muscles aren't toned, but your muscles are made to be toned, right? Same thing as our spiritual muscles in a sense. And so this virtue is perfecting us to do what we should do. But still, what about today and virtue, 2024? Well, here I want to go back to G.K. Chesterton in his Orthodoxy. Filled with lovely, a lot of great quotes, but there's one that I particularly like. And I think it explains today why we need virtue. Now, he's writing over a century ago, but I would say what he's saying is very applicable today, why we need to go back to Thomas and Catherine. He said, the modern world, let's say 2024, is not evil. He said, in some ways, it's far too good. What does he mean by that? He said it is full of wild, wasted virtues. Why? He says when a religious scheme is shattered. Now, he was speaking of the Reformation, but I would say we can apply that today. Has the religious scheme been shattered by secularism? He says when that religious scheme is shattered, so if you think of Europe, Christendom, but even beyond Christendom, just our contemporary secularization. He says, when that religious scheme is shattered, he says it's not merely vices that are let loose. So when we look at the world, it's not merely vices. He says the vices are let loose and they wander and do damage, but he says the virtues are also let loose. And they wander and do more damage. And as I say, this is a question, as you think in the universities, what are the virtues promoted? How do these virtues do damage? Why? He says, because they are old Christian virtues gone mad. They're disconnected. And that's why we're going to speak of Catherine and her connecting the virtues, which is also Aquinas, which is an ancient idea, that the virtues are all connected. They're not isolated. And this is a problem in our world today. So, as I say, I think Chesterton describes something of the world today and why we need to understand virtue. Also, though, specifically for Catherine, in our world where technology with AI, etc., do we understand the human being? What Catherine offers as well is a clear theological common sense, which we saw again with Professor Corbett Estes St. Thomas, commonsensical. Catherine, too, is commonsensical. She understood her creatureliness and what she's going to call our nothingness before God. I'll come back to that later. That we stand before the creature, before the creator, excuse me. And she knew that God was crazy in love with his creature. She says, madly in love with his creature, drunk in love with his creature. Do people today understand, do we understand God's love for us as a creature? That is Catherine's message. She says he is so drunk in love that he sent his son to redeem humanity. And that message, I think, is very necessary today. So, virtue. So let's move into virtue. So I've given you a Thomistic definition. Catherine, you're not going to really find a definition. She presumes you have a definition. As I say, she's very caught up in right now she's writing this letter. She's presuming a great deal, but she gives some definitions of virtue. She says virtue is what? It's a lasting wealth. A wealth, not concrete money, but a wealth as to human wealth. She says at the moment of our death, virtue will make an accounting for us before God. It is our virtue that God will look at when we die. She says, virtue pays the debts we owe. What debt? The debt of original sin. So by my living this virtue, I'm perfecting myself, but in some way, I'm paying back for something of that original sin. Don't get caught up in the paying back, though. She says, virtue accompanies me throughout my life, and it helps me against my enemies. Well, what are the enemies today? What are the enemies today that we face whereby we need virtue? Professor Corbett even mentioned, yes, first of all, the devil. But also, how do we deal with even, let's say, technology? Not saying technology is bad, but how do we deal with that? How does virtue help us? Virtue, she says, gives us light. So my point is, again, Catherine doesn't give a concrete definition, but it's going to align with what Thomas says. At this point, though, I want to go into another principle, and that's Christ as the exemplar of virtue. When Catherine speaks of virtue, she says, true, solid virtue. So she is immediately saying, I'm speaking of true virtue, and that's why I say formally virtue, the highest true virtue is infused virtue from God. What is this true virtue? How do we know what it is? She gives the example of Christ. Christ has true, solid virtue. He's the perfect exemplar. This teaching on Christ, and what we're going to go into here is this bridge, is based on original sin, Genesis, right? Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve were created in grace, right? They had access to, they were in the Garden of Eden, easy access to heaven, correct? They sin. What happens? We're cut off. And Catherine uses the image of this abyss that is created between heaven and earth. We cannot reach heaven after original sin. Why? Because that sin offended God, we could not get across that abyss to reach heaven. How are we going to get there? We need a bridge. Can we build the bridge? Can human beings build the bridge after original sin? We caused the sin. Can we build the bridge? No, we are incapable. Why? Because it is a bridge that has to reach something supernatural. We are only human. Therefore, what does the Father do? He sends his Son, and this is part of the dialogue. The Father even tells Catherine, I sent my Son to be that bridge. So this is the whole foundation of Catherine speaking about il ponte, the bridge. What is the bridge? No, it's who is the bridge? The bridge is Jesus Christ on the cross, and this cross extends from earth to heaven. So what is the life of virtue? We have to cross this bridge. Now, Catherine, again, she's writing these letters and she mixes her metaphors, etc. So if you're a literary person, you may struggle with Catherine a little bit. She has no problem throwing in different images. We're going to see that. And as I say, mixing her metaphors, throwing things around. But when she talks about this bridge, she says, first, it's Christ's body. We have to cross it. We start with his feet. Then we have to cross to his side, the wounded side, and we cross then to his mouth to reach heaven. But she's also going to say the bridge is also Christ's virtues. It's made up of rocks. What are the rocks? Virtues of Christ, these bricks, cemented together with his blood. So as I say, she has no problem throwing that out. It's his body, it's also his virtues, etc. What's the point? Christ is a perfect exemplar, and we have to cross this bridge to arrive at virtue. She says, true, solid virtue, all virtue draws life from Christ. So all virtue is in Christ. This is where I say she's speaking here specifically about infused virtue. This life of virtue, though, is not merely about, you may think, because this is a problem where, well, I have to be virtuous to make God happy. That's not what it's about. And the Father says, you don't become virtuous to please me. He doesn't need our virtue, right? Father had already said, God is already perfect existence. He doesn't need our virtue. He says, it's not for my good that I'm pleased when I see virtue in you. It's for your own profit. You become happy. You will be happier if you have this virtue. So, which goes back to our whole idea of we are made for happiness, and we will find true happiness when we are virtuous. All right, leaving that aside, let's go to the tree of charity. So what is this tree of charity and why this tree as to what is virtue? Again, an image that the Father introduces to Catherine in the dialogue. So he's speaking to Catherine about virtue, and he says, okay, imagine a circle in the ground. And in that circle, there's some soil. And in that soil, a tree is growing. There's some great trees around here that you can look at, around Stonyhurst and in the pastures beyond. So imagine this tree growing in this circle, in this soil. He says that tree nourishes itself from the earth, but what earth? The earth that's contained within this circle. If the tree were uprooted from the soil, there was one just on one of the paths, I think with all the rain, it just fell over. If the tree is uprooted, it will die. So there's something important about this circle and what is within this circle. The tree is the image of our soul, which is made for love. And that's why this is a tree of charity. Like a tree with many branches, a tree of charity has many offshoots. And so actually there is a little shoot, if I can do this very quickly, there's a little shoot coming off of this tree that is also being nurtured. This tree, at the uppermost branches, we have charity. I didn't write these on just because I'm playing with the board and it was taking too much time to have fun with my little new toy. Charity, faith, hope. The theological virtues are at the top. And Catherine says they're so high up because they have God as their object. You can't even see the top of the tree. But you also have these, they're going to be big branches within the tree, the cardinal virtues. But there's also smaller branches and you're going to have all the different virtues that are in this tree. But as I say, I'm going to speak of four specific virtues. Now, with this tree, if it's the soul, does everybody have every virtue? Well, that's back to this connection of the virtues. I need to have something of all the virtues, but the Father even tells Catherine, some people have more of one virtue than another, or they just have the seed of the virtue. Why? This is because of the necessity of charity. In what way? The Father says, I've distributed these virtues so that no one has all of them. Why? Because he wants us to be dependent upon one another. And it also shows something of his beauty, his total goodness. None of us as human beings can totally possess that total goodness. But together, we all show something of that goodness. Put simply, he says he wants none of us to escape. Escape. We can't escape the exercise of charity. To be charitable, you're going to want to be the hermit, the good hermit, even the Benedictine hermit. they first have to be able to live in community in order to grow in perfect charity. So, regardless of our temperament and nature, we will have similarities in our tree, in our soul, but there will be differences. So what about charity? First, charity as the mother of all virtue. Charity has been traditionally called the mother of all virtue, the form of our virtue. What does that mean? Why is she the mother in the form? Catherine said also, when we think of, we receive charity, faith, hope, all the infused virtues at baptism. Is that sufficient? If I can say, okay, I think I'm in a state of grace based on my actions, etc., is that it? Okay, I'm holy. Have I arrived? No. Catherine will speak of even these theological virtues coming to birth. What does that mean? Well, once I've received, if I'm in a state of grace, I still, that's just a seed. I have to practice this virtue. And how do I practice this virtue? Only in true, perfect charity. This is why Paul, who counts off virtue after virtue after virtue, and says, what, I'm just a sounding gong unless I have charity. Why? Because charity in some way has to be there. She becomes the form. What does this mean as to the form? In a sense, charity does what? She gives the other virtues her end. What does that mean? Well, charity has as its end God himself. Well, what if you're working on sobriety? Or what if you're working on temperance using your cell phone, etc., technology? You're dealing with pornography, etc. What does that have to do with charity? How does charity come into play there? Let's take two different people. One who's in a state of grace, one who's not in a state of grace. They're both working on sobriety. What's the difference? As to one who's in a state of grace with this sobriety as an infused virtue, and somebody who's just trying to, of their own, for the good of their family, for their own health, they're moderating their intake of alcohol. That's good, right? It's a good human virtue to not overindulge in alcoholic drink. What happens, though, if someone has grace? That grace doesn't change. It's still about alcohol. I'm still trying to moderate my intake of alcohol. But now, with grace, what happens? Charity becomes the mother, changes that end to what? It's not merely about my human life and the good of my family or my health. It's now for the love of God. This is what it means for charity to be the form of all the virtues. And why Paul is saying, unless I have charity, I may be pretty good on a natural level. But charity is going to transform those virtues to bring them to their highest end. Charity gives its own end to all of the virtues, becoming the form. So how does this charity again, though? How do I develop this charity? How does it come to birth? I receive it in the sacraments. I receive it through God's grace, but how does it come to birth? Through my neighbor. Darn. You can't just sit in your room and become wonderfully charitable. You have to go out in some way. We have to be careful, Catherine says. We can deceive ourselves with a holy facade. Oh, but I go in the chapel and I'm so holy. Or I'm so holy when nobody's around me. Right? It's a facade. We can deceive ourselves. We can really be unjust, envious, and stingy. But we're very good at it when the neighbor's not around. And we think, oh, I've achieved this holiness. I'm no longer stingy. I'm no longer envious. It's because there's nobody there to tempt me. The father again says to Catherine, our neighbor is a means to exercise and prove your virtue. Catherine speaks often of our virtue has to be tested, which we'll get to in another moment with another virtue. He says, the service that you do, the father tells her, you can't render it just to me. Don't just say you love God if you don't love the neighbor you do not see. The father says the same thing to Catherine. You must show me your love through your neighbor. So that's pretty much charity. I'm going to skip now to humility. Another one of the important virtues. Why? Well, where is humility on the tree? The whole tree is charity, but charity is also here at the top, we said, with the theological virtues. Now, I'm not negating, and Catherine doesn't negate. She speaks about faith. In fact, even what Father Matthew said yesterday in terms of this, the singleness of mind and of the heart, Catherine speaks of the eye of your intellect with faith. And that's another whole discourse. So I'm not negating the importance of those, but I'm only touching on these four virtues. Why? Because as I say, we don't have time. There are four virtues that are very important as to the whole tree of virtue. So we've got charity here. We've got faith and hope, which are important. But I'm going to descend to humility. Humility is the soil. Catherine builds on the tradition. This is an ancient tradition. We find even in the scriptures as well as in the fathers. So she's not saying anything totally new here when she speaks of this little virtue of humility. Unless you become like the little child. But Catherine gives a little nuance to her teaching. And this is where I'm going to link into with our second talk. The second talk, what's the circle? Remember the father had said, imagine a circle. The soil is humility, but it's in the circle of self-knowledge. So that's the second talk. So I'm just introducing it here, but we're going to talk about that later this afternoon. But it's important is where this humility, where this soil is. So what about this humility? Charity, we said, is the mother, but Catherine plays around again with the images. She says, okay, charity is the mother, but charity even has the nurse of humility. Humility is in some way, why? Because humility is giving the nutrients to this charity. What is humility? The truth of who I am before my Creator. How will I love a God if I don't understand who God is and if I think I'm God? I'm not going to love God. That's why we go down to this root, the depth of this humility of knowing who I am, knowing a Creator, knowing my Creator, which then enables me to love the Creator. Also, just for another little point here from Benedict the 16th, he relates these two, humility and charity. He says, humility is required to accept that I need another. Today in our individualistic world, do I need God? It's humility that tells me that I need another. Why? Benedict says, to free me from what is mine. Well, do I want to be freed from what is mine? Why would I want to be freed from what is mine? Because what I have comes from him. So it's humility who enables me to understand who God is and who I am, that everything I have is a gift. This is humility. It's not a false deprecation. True humility, it's not denying my gifts and my achievements. That's actually pride. We speak of a false humility. True humility is the truth about who I am and the good things that I have. But again, they're not merely mine. They are gifts from God. St. Catherine here builds upon Paul's words. When I am weak, it is then that I am strong. When I recognize that I am nothing, in a way, in a proper manner, it is then that I have this strength. If you want to read further on this, here we've got St. Benedict. St. Benedict has his 12 stages of humility. So the saint we're celebrating today, if you wanted to read more, even Thomas is going to go back to Benedict. And Benedict's writing on humility, it's for his monks, but it's also applicable to all of us in some way. So I'm going to leave humility aside there. At least we have something of the basis. And I'm going to go on to prudence. Where is prudence? Prudence, okay, charity is the mother. Prudence is what? Prudence is the queen. Well, what's the difference between the mother and the queen? You've got the queen mother here in England, right? Or we did have the queen mother, so we got a little problem. But Catherine's going to make a distinction between them. The queen. Recta ratio angelium. I don't know if my writing will be very good here. Recta ratio angelium. This is Thomas's definition, but Catherine's teaching. Sorry there. Goes along this. Right, recta, right. Reason, ratio. Every virtue, remember, is something connected with virtue. Agibilium, in action. So prudence is about my action here and now. Well, do we need that if we have charity? Isn't charity sufficient? Come on, if I have faith, hope, and love, how can you say that? Isn't that enough? Those are the theological virtues. They have God as their object. Do I need prudence? Infused prudence? Yes. Absolutely. Now, remember, it's this sprout coming off here. It's connected to charity, but it also has something where it's also nourishing all of these other virtues. In what way? Well, the shoot branches up from charity, but also, as she says, it seasons the other virtues. What does this mean? Now, one other little aside. We speak of prudence. Thomas is going to write a great deal about prudence. Catherine, if you're reading any translations of Catherine, you're going to see more as discernment, discretion. She'll make some fine distinctions here. I'm just going to use those terms synonymously. Prudence, discernment, discretion. What is it? My reason as to, applying my reason to my action. What does prudence do? It gives me a rule to know what actions truly render charity towards God and towards my neighbor. So what does that mean? Do I need this prudence? Well, let's just use a simple example. You have a friend of yours or a family member who maybe is caught up in pornography or some other vice. And you, being a good man or a woman, want to help them, right? In charity, correct? So I need to be charitable towards this person. So what do? Is charity sufficient for you to guide your friend, your brother, sister? Is that all you need? Well, how are you charitable? And if you're dealing with a couple people who have the same vice, do you have to treat them from charity? Do you treat them the exact same way? No. Why? Prudence has to be guided by this infused charity. Why? What is prudence? Prudence is telling me what to do in this specific action. What's the charitable act in this situation? Maybe this person needs help, but maybe I'm not the one to do it. Maybe if I approach them, they're going to just reject. Maybe there's someone else they will listen to. What if I determine that I am the one in charity to say something to this person to help them? Are there other questions I have to ask? Yeah. What do I say? When do I say it? How do I say it? Charity doesn't tell me that. This is why I need prudence. Prudence is telling me, in this particular moment, this is the charitable act. This is what I should say. This is how I should say it. Because a lot of people think, well, I'm being charitable, but we can be very harsh in our charity of giving truth. We can drive people away from the church and say, well, I was being charitable. Careful. This is why infused prudence has to come into play. To truly be charitable, to truly show that love for that person. What does prudence do? Prudence, he says, Catherine writes, it dissolves darkness. It dissipates ignorance. It gives us a certitude that this is the right thing to do in this moment, that this is truly charitable. It cannot be deceived. It gives me constancy to carry out the act. Well, maybe I decide this is what I need to do, even if you're discerning out here, I'm going to use marriage or a vocation. I'm dealing with a young man who has discerned many times to be a priest, whether in a religious order or a diocesan. He's discerned many times. One of the priests said, I've written him 4 recommendation letters. I'm not going to write you another recommendation letter. Why? He lacks constancy. So he prudently decides, but prudence is what? In action. You have to carry it out. How often today do we make a decision? We know what we should do, but we don't carry it out. Prudence gives us a certitude, but it also gives us a constancy to carry through to the end. This is why it is so essential. Catherine says again, what does prudence do? It helps us withdraw from the luxuries, indulgence of the world. How am I going to be charitable? How am I going to study if I am caught up as to, I have to use the computer, right? I have to use my cell phone. But how do I prudently determine how to use it for my good to achieve my proper end? Today, you can't just say, I'm not going to use a computer at all. I tried to go without a cell phone without a smartphone for many years, and I could do it for a while. But at this point, because of my traveling, I finally determined prudently, I need a smartphone. And I had to ask for a smartphone. However, now I still have to determine, how do I prudently use that smartphone? I've dealt with so many people who are addicted, even priests and religious, or people who, I can't pray, I can't meditate. And I say, did you turn off your smartphone? number one. And then they'll make an excuse. Oh, but I'm living internationally. My family has to contact me. I said, yeah, and you can set up a time when they can do it. Turn off your phone. Right? Why? Because as I say, we can trick ourselves. We need this prudence to guide us. How do I do this in this moment? How do I avoid those dangers? Now, let me just throw out here another point on Catherine. A lot of people are afraid of Catherine. Why? One of her biographers, great book, I recommend, Johannes Jorgensen, he says, I found her repugnant. Even John Paul II, when he declared her co-patroness of Europe, said, he talked about towering peaks. Well, some people are afraid of heights. So how do we approach these things? Even Thomas Aquinas, that Professor Corbett talked about yesterday, these are towering peaks. How do we approach them? Catherine, I say that fear. Why am I bringing this in with prudence? Because a lot of people are afraid of Catherine because she speaks a lot about suffering, which is the next virtue. We're going to talk about patience and asceticism. But she also says what? She says, prudently, we need to determine. If I'm strong, maybe I should fast and practice ascetic, have a severe ascetic practices. Just because Catherine herself had these ascetic practices doesn't mean that's what I'm supposed to imitate. Even when Professor Corbett was speaking of Thomas Aquinas and his contemplative move, well, maybe that's not me. That's not what we're supposed to imitate. Prudence says, what am I supposed to imitate about this saint? It's the virtue in my own particular life, in my own particular circumstances. Why do I bring this up here with prudence? Because as I say, Catherine speaks a lot about suffering and about asceticism, but she also says what? She says, you need to determine, are you strong enough to fast or should you not fast in this moment? Even when you're praying, okay, some people are kneeling and lying on the floor and doing all kinds of postures, but I have to determine what is prudent for me in this moment. I have an old tennis injury, so I can't kneel as much as I would like to. And prudence tells me, don't do it. Why? Because I tried it for many years and I kept aggravating the injury. And prudence says, stop kneeling, you idiot. And Catherine even says, Catherine of all people, this severe asceticism says, you know, if you need to lie down at times, you lie down and pray. Whoa. So she's very prudent, practical. But we have to move to our fourth and final virtue that we're going to speak of this morning. Patience. Now, why patience? We've got charity. We've got humility. We've got prudence. Patience. Is that an important virtue? It's another, I would say, a little virtue, like humility, meekness, patience. For Catherine, it is an incredibly important virtue, and you see that in her tree of charity and where it is placed. Because patience, she says, oops, sorry, I was deleting some of it, is right here in the center of the tree, the sap. What's the importance of the sap in the tree? So patience, she says, midolo. It's the sap here. What is the sap doing? It's carrying the nutrients from the soil, the good soil, to all the other virtues. So that's why I'm bringing this virtue in, because Catherine is saying, you can't have virtue if you're not patient. Ouch. How many of us are truly patient? Well, let's look at what Catherine is saying here. Patience, first of all, is, again, like humility, it's not being a doormat and allowing people to walk all over me. Patience is a little virtue, but it's actually a very strong virtue. We have to be careful of minimizing the importance of this. And you can also go back to the fathers of the church, Tertullian, Augustine, Cyprian, all right, on patience. And you see Catherine in her writing, there's elements of their teachings that come out. Catherine is going to say that patience is proof and indicator of every other virtue and every other vice. If you are patient, she says it is the heart of charity. I can't have charity if I'm not patient. What does that mean? Why? Patience, she says, shows that all the other virtues are alive. But the opposite is also true. If you are impatient, how do you know you don't have virtue? Very simple. Are you impatient? Why? The virtues are imperfect if someone is impatient. What does this mean? Well, what is patience? Patience comes from the Latin patior, passus, to endure. Patience is about enduring. What do you endure? Do you endure pleasure? Do you endure joys? Do you endure good things? No, what do we endure? Suffering. We endure crosses, but we don't like that. We avoid those things. This is why some people don't like Catherine, because she speaks so much about this patience, which has as its object suffering. I don't like suffering. I want to avoid suffering. But again, this is very human. Why? Because we will all suffer. We are vulnerable creatures and we will suffer. To think that you will avoid suffering is rather, excuse me, stupid. Because we will suffer. The question is, how will we suffer? And that is Catherine's whole teaching on patience and suffering. It's not dismal. It is a reality of we are vulnerable, as I noted, and we have to be able to respond to that suffering in a virtuous way. And so she's going to speak continually of virtue being tested and the necessity of patience. Why? Because if you don't have a virtue, how do you get it? You just pray for it? Well, that works to a degree, but oftentimes it isn't sufficient. How do you know you have a virtue? It has to be tested. What does that mean? Catherine says, well, if you want to test patience, how is it tested? When your neighbors insult you, how do you respond when somebody insults you? How dare, with indignation? How dare you? Catherine says we must be patient. Endure it. Humility is tested by what? By somebody who's proud. How is your faith tested? When somebody questions it. By a lack of faith. How is our hope tested? By somebody who has no hope. How is our justice tested? When I encounter or I perform an unjust act or I experience that. Your compassion is tested by cruelty. Your gentleness is trusted by the wrathful. Your neighbors are the channel whereby all your virtues are tested. So I'm going to conclude right now. And we'll come back to this a little bit because with the afternoon session, we're going to talk about self-knowledge, which is this circle here. So we're going to come back to some of this on virtue, but we're going to do a specific focus on self-knowledge. But I want to end with two scriptural passages that confirm what Catherine is saying about patience. The first one is Paul's hymn to charity in 1 Corinthians. What's the first line of Paul's hymn to charity?
Love is patient.
Why would he start there? Why would he start with patience? Love is patient. Catherine is very Pauline, and I would say her whole development of this is based on St. Paul. Yes, it's also kind and all of those other things, but it starts off, love must be patient or it is not love. Second passage is from the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew's account, where we have the 8 Beatitudes. And here we have the last of the Beatitudes is what? Blessed are you when people revile you, when they persecute you, when they utter all kinds of evil against you. Run the other way, quick. And yet we are saying, blessed are you, and the Father says your reward is great in heaven. What is that? Patience. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.